Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Inside Betting Podcast. My name is Matthew Trenhale. This episode I'm going to try and look at two suggestions slash questions that I received on Twitter. Again, I'm going from the back, so I will be catching up with the more recent questions soon. The first one was by at @quarterfirst4. And was a suggestion to talk about exchange manipulation. I'm going to have a stab at looking at different aspects of that, and hopefully I will cover the one that he is most interested in. And the second was actually a recent question, to be fair, that I just wanted to tackle because I'm by no means very expert on horse racing, but I know a little bit. And I thought that the two subjects together would make a full podcast. And this is by @pulledup1. And his suggestion was to look at impact value versus actual over expected, often described just as A/E. I believe this is mostly used in horse racing, although there may be other areas where they use this kind of analysis, but the most common area that I see it used is in horse racing. And in fact, I suppose one of the most common area for UK horse racing enthusiasts would be, invariably it used to be talked about, quite probably still is, used to be talked about quite extensively on the Flat Stats website, which I certainly used to use. Many years ago when I was trying to get more involved with horse racing, although I do not do very much now. So let's first of all start with exchange manipulation. Now, by exchanges, obviously we're looking at the betting exchanges such as Betfair, BetDAX, Markets, Matchbook. And by manipulation, presumably this is by trying to utilize different methods to manipulate the odds that are suggested on the exchange or made on the exchange for someone's benefit. The very classic old-fashioned version of what people would describe as exchange manipulation, when the exchanges were less covered with bots and there was less even software used for sort of faster clicking and these kind of things, faster refresh rates, if we go back, was simply people would look at the three boxes visible conventionally on the exchange and would look to see where large amounts of money were put and would then draw a conclusion. So if someone wanted to have, we always assumed that big money was smart money, rightly or wrongly, and if someone put up a big bet on the back or the lay side, we would assume that the market would move in the direction, sort of fear the volume, if you like. So it would move away from that. And if you were someone who knew that this was the way the market was going to behave, you could put up a large block of money without any fear of it getting matched, knowing that it would push the market in one direction, allowing you to then bet in smaller sizes, slowly but surely chipping away at bigger odds. And this did indeed used to work. And I will go on to say why I'm not so sure how easy it is to do now. But certainly there was plenty of people who would put these large blocks up, again, particularly in horse racing, and you would quite often see the horse steam or drift basis the large block of money. And the amount of money needed was obviously dependent on how liquid the market was. You know, easier to do when the market is less liquid, but harder to then get a decent sized position on yourself, having done the manipulation. And easy to get wrong, easy to mess up, because there'll always be people who are willing to take a bit of a shorter price in order to get a large stake on, both smart and less educated. So you always ran that risk. But it certainly worked well at one point. And then when you had the software come into play and a lot more traders, particularly pre-horse race traders, come in. They would increasingly use, in the early days, a weight of money factor, which would compare the amount of money available on the back and the lay side to draw a conclusion about which direction the horse's price would move, or any selection's price would move. And this was seen as a great indicator once upon a time. And so, in this rush, I suppose, in this gold rush of early pre-horse racing traders who would take the weight of money as gospel, that would generate more volume for people who were, let's say, manipulating in this way the price to get quite a lot on. So I think there probably was almost a little golden age. But people soon realized that visible money was not the same as traded money. So people started to look more at where the money was actually traded. And people would look more at ladders, I suppose, where they would see where the last traded price was, where the money had been traded. So it was less easy to spook them just by putting up large volumes. And invariably, you also got people who were more sophisticated, who were pricing up all the horses in a race in a sort of proper traditional horse racing tissue style, pricing up to 100%, and then using whatever algorithms they had available to them or bots to then trade that tissue. This causes a problem because for someone who's trying to manipulate the market, because if someone is trading a tissue and they're trading it without emotion, they're not necessarily going to be spooked by the large volume of money. So if you have a horse that's trading around, I don't know, 9 to 9.2, and you think that the horse should be a sevens chance, and so you might put up a block of money at 8 in the hope of pushing the horse out nearer to 10. You're trying to get a little bit, squeeze a bit more out of it. There could have been, for all sat on the lay side, let's say the market's got 10 on either side. There could have been someone sat there at 9.2, an algorithm, and the algorithm knows that what it has to do is just sit on the lay side and hope to get matched. It'll constantly sort of hug that lay price wherever it moves. So it's never paying the spread, never actually going to back necessarily. It just sits there waiting to get matched. And the underlying tissue for that may say that horse is seven as well. Now, it may behave that it just sits on the lay side, unless someone has then made the decision to cross the divide, pay the spread, if a large enough amount of money is available. Because the reason that you would just sit there drip feeding in small amounts into the market like this is you don't want to spook the price yourself. You don't want to go around like a hooligan just smashing it up. So, but you may have a rule inside your bot that says, well, I'm willing to break that and behave like a hooligan if it's worth my while. So you may think, well, eights is good enough, I make it sevens. So you can be trying to spook the market yourself. You put up your 500 and then bang, suddenly the algorithm swallows it up and you're stuck there with a negative EV bet for yourself. So the more of that kind of trading that happens, and those people, if you're bold enough to trade lots of horse races a day, with a 100% tissue, then you are going to be more than likely up against people with a serious attitude towards trading and quite possibly at the more profitable end of the scale. So, very difficult. And then we go a bit further along, and I suppose the arse just kind of fell out of the exchange markets a little bit with pre-match horse racing, in that you just weren't able to get any volume down early morning. In fact, the real significant volume increasingly seems to be 15 minutes before the race, even. Now, people often say, like, there's no money on the exchange. There's no money visible. It's always hard to know how much intent there is behind the visible money on the exchange. So you could log on at 9:30 and see £5, £10 either side of every runner quite wide. But there could be someone who's happy to be matched in tens of thousands, both those sides, over time, but they're only going to drip feed it in the size that the race will allow. But unfortunately, if you've got lots of participants who are willing to trade in big size but aren't willing to share their hand, show their hands, and the only way they know that they want to show more of their hand is by the traded volume of the race, you get this horrible scenario where no one trades, no one does any business, and so the stakes don't increase until we get to close to the off, at which point the bigger money has to come in anyway, and you get a situation where there's now this sort of heavy flurry and huge swings. I couldn't say for certain here at all because I do not watch the horse racing markets, but from what I understand, some of the late swings in price changes now are just incomparable to what, you know, to the previous market. You know, once upon a time the market was, you know, barring sort of late stable gambles or these kind of things, you know, the prices used to be quite steady, supposedly, for sort of the last 10 minutes at, you know, for a large amount of races. And now it's just absolutely winging it all over the place as we get closer and closer to the off. So now you've got a problem whereby you know, there's not much advantage to be had by trying to manipulate the market because you've got no idea how much there is going to be able to knock out the other side. You know, in those early racing markets where there is only tenners aside for every runner, you know, what is big enough to spoof the market? You know, you might put up 50 quid and you think, well, that's big enough to sort of create a move. And then it gets swallowed up by a bot, and then the bot then then resets itself back to where the prices were. And you've got no idea of what the true price that bot actually thinks it is, or how you're going to get it to move outwards. Once upon a time, manipulating bots was also much easier because people were less creative with the way they traded. But I think more and more there's been some people taking some ideas from the financial trading world and people reducing the time lag. You know, bots once upon a time could be fooled just because there was time taken for it to reassess the market each time. And when I say time taken, as in, you know, it would take a few seconds to sort of figure out what was going on, as opposed to now, you know, you have people who take it very seriously, getting their virtual PCs closer and closer to the exchange, servers closer to the exchange, stuff that sort of happened on steroids in the financial markets. So, yeah, so I think that market manipulation in that sense has become increasingly more difficult. I think if you've got deep pockets and it's a race where you're pretty sure that you can get a substantial amount down come those 15 minutes, I can see how you really could just manipulate the market by just breaking those bots, if you like, as in, you know, if you just, let's say there's a horse, you know, and it starts the day at, you know, say it's a short price favorite, you know, 6-4, something like that, and, you know, you just start, it's there in tenners either side, and you just start laying it and laying it and laying it and laying it until the point where there's, you know, someone in charge of the bot or the market making sort of machine says, well, hang on a minute, you know, I'm not a huge fan of this lowish grade race massively drifting, or someone who's desperately keen to lay this favorite. So we'll, you know, we'll ignore the tissue at this stage and see where this goes. And you push it out, and, you know, who knows, maybe you can push it out to 3, say, 3-1, as in, you know, from 6-4. And then, you know, that come the off of the race, you know, you'll be able to get a lot more down on the exchange. You know, it's possible even that the pre-match traders will look at the chart for this horse, and, you know, if they're not careful to sort of separate out the time frame of when these drifts or steams happen, you know, you can get someone saying, well, there's this favorite is friendless in the market, it's going to go that way. And then, you know, when the pre-match traders start hitting it, you can drift it even more. So that's possible. I think it's no longer a free exercise. Once upon a time, you just had to show it in the box and show the money in the box, and you could get the move for free. Now I think you've got to earn the move, although, yes, it's possible that the earning that move can be cheaper than it's ever been because people are trading it in smaller size. My big fear is that one day, you know, those people who are responsible for a huge percentage of the pre-racing volume will just turn the machines off. And hopefully the other exchanges will have something in place when that comes. Anyway, and then let's move on to the other type of exchange manipulation, which is, of course, manipulating the prices of people who trust the exchange to provide their guide. Now, this most definitely has become more and more prevalent because it's become more and more prevalent for bookmakers to adhere, particularly with horse racing, to what the Betfair market or the exchange market as a whole is saying. So no one wants to give any money to match bettors or arbitrage players. So they will make sure that their horse racing odds are linked in some way. You know, some of them are still quite prosaic and it just tells them that there's an arb, and other ones are just fully linked up to it. And, you know, it's impossible for them to be too far away from the lay price with any of their horses. Now, in that situation, the opportunity for manipulation is big. So if you are, and it's become harder to know where the real intent is because they're now pinning their prices to all these 10 and 20 pound boxes, and they're just assuming that that's a good enough marker of where the price will be. Absolutely isn't in the early markets. I think everyone's pretty wise to just how far out they can be. But it's what they've got, and they don't want to give away even to one person. You know, if there's 10 quid at, you know, at sort of 19s, and, you know, you're at, you know, 20 to 1, no one wants to give away that £10 match bet even, because they know, or rather history has taught them that unless you know what you're doing, and even then, it's hard to know what you're doing on every race, every day. Giving away those match bet opportunities is not sensible. So it has become easier to manipulate bookmakers' odds by putting up appropriate backs and lays on the exchange. And if you look at the previous example I gave where someone was with deep pockets was willing to smash out that short price favorite, well, that's a great scenario whereby you can smash that favorite out, and then you're able to go into a betting shop at, you know, 11 in the morning, and you'll be quite easily be able to get you and, you know, anyone else who you involve in the exercise to get quite a lot of money down on that sort of price favorite quite easily. So in that situation, manipulating the price can be very beneficial to people who take their betting seriously. And I think that is more common. It's harder, you know, it's not really possible to do as easily as something like the football markets nowadays, because a vast majority of the market-making bots for football are generally taking Asian handicap prices and converting them into three-way correct score, etc. prices. So, and bookmakers are utilizing those Asian feeds predominantly, and so they're not taking their guides so much from the exchange. So yes, you get that situation where exchange manipulation is definitely useful now in that regard. Are bookmakers wise to this? I think they're aware of it, and I think they know it happens. The problem is that how do you turn a low liquid horse racing exchange market into a decent 100% tissue to then add your overround to? It's hard. You know, do you look at how far into the boxes do you look? You know, if something's got, you know, something's 8 and 9, you know, in the third box away is at 16, you know, and at 6s or something like that, you know, are you looking at the information? Are you taking all that information? Are you, you know, creating a volume weighted average to on the back and the lay side? You know, are you trying to find a midpoint that's, using the traded money already as a guide, you're using Betfair, SP's indicator. I don't think it's easy. There's just not, when there isn't much information there, it's hard to come up with a good answer. So I think as long as the markets are trading in this very thin, illiquid way, and bookmakers just shrug and say, well, that's the best we can do, then there'll still be ample opportunity for people to manipulate the exchange market and get bets that they shouldn't necessarily say shouldn't, that the bookmaker would not want to be laying if they knew what was going on, because they have to follow the exchange market so rigidly. This is also true of exchanges. The early, certainly the early markets market maker for horse racing was just a, I don't know whether they actually had the Betfair API specifically or what, but and that was fantastic because you could just put backs and lays up on Betfair, and the you didn't have to leave them up very long because markets was a decent had decent technology behind it, and so their prices would move pretty quickly to reflect that. And of course you were paying less commission on Smarkets than you were on Betfair, so you effectively could just have the same bets at a bigger price and less commission, just by manipulating them first on Betfair. And this, happened at BetDAC and Matchbook, I think, have taken a different attitude towards market making than just directly copying Betfair in some places. Although the horse racing odds, even if you're not copying Betfair directly, your horse racing odds will always reflect the exchange to a degree, because whoever's the market maker is always going to be aware of what the Betfair market's doing. So they can sometimes look like carbon copies, but in fact, there can be actual different opinions lying behind it, waiting to leap into action if the market moves into a positive or negative EV position for them. But so that's a little bit about exchange manipulation. I don't know if I've missed other areas that particularly we get the scenario whereby there's manipulation of because SPs and Betfair SPs sort of have their correlation and relationship. You can get people manipulating who want to manipulate the SP of the race, whether it's bookmakers or other individuals, and using the exchange to then manipulate that, because on-course bookmakers aren't going to deviate too drastically from the exchange. But I mean, the costs at this point of manipulating the SP price in that sort of last 15 minutes, there are going to be people who have a pretty good idea of where they want, of what price they want that horse to go off at, from a modeling perspective. I don't, that's an area I just don't know enough about. I know the age-old stories of bookmakers going down to the track with suitcases of money in the for the last race to, smash a horse in for the purpose of a long, a big accumulated liability they had running on onto that horse. And I don't know if something necessary, as the exchange now dictates things so much, I don't know whether you have to do sort of similar types of manipulation on the exchange as well as on course to achieve the same ends. But yeah, so anyway, I hope quarter first four, I've answered some of your thoughts there, or maybe I've completely disagreed with your thoughts on the matter, and I'd be happy for you to give me some other suggestions or thoughts as well. Now, moving on to at bookies, no, at pulled up ones, impact value versus actual over expected. Like I say, the first time I encountered any of these, impact values are something that's been written about by Horse Racing Betting Types. I don't know if Morden wrote about it, but been around for some time. But I first discovered it on Flat Stats. I don't know if it's even, it feels like over 10 years ago, maybe, or I first had people talking about it. But basically, for those who don't know, with impact value, you're taking a query, if you like, and trying to find out how much that query or theory impacts the probability of, in this case, a horse's winning chances. So, in fact, you can go even now onto the Flat Stats website and look up the impact values blog section. So the first example they give is last time out winners. So in the example they give, you're examining this large group of runners over this many races on, it's last time out winners on the all weather. And we find that out of that big sample of runners and races, a smaller amount were last time out winners. And then of those last time out winners, a certain amount went on to win that race. So you want to know what's the impact of being a last time out winner on your chances of winning your next race if it is on the all weather. And so the calculation is basically a percentage of winners that were last time out winners divided by the percentage of runners that were last time out winners. And then you can determine impact value. So in this case, in their example, the impact value came out as 2.07. So it basically means that if you're a last time out winner, you're pretty much twice as likely to win the race compared to a horse that was not a last time out winner. And they then give an example of a negative impact value, effectively. So first run on the all weather, they give us the example. So this came out as 0.67. So you could say that a horse is 0.67 times less likely to win than a horse that has run on the all weather before. So this is telling you what, you know, you can ask, essentially, you can query your database how much impact a certain factor has on a horse's chances of race. And if you can build up a collection of these things that have a positive impact or negative impact, the idea is that you can then use this information for your own betting. This was something that was very useful, I think, in the early, when I say early, you know, so we're talking pre-exchange days of horse racing, in that you could, and, you know, the SPs were not necessarily as indicative of a horse's win probability as something like the Betfair SPs are now. And you could look at something that you could find a feature, and if you feel that that particular attribute had not been factored in as much as you thought, you had a number on it, you know. So if you thought that last time out winners were not treated as being on all weather, were not treated as being two times more likely to win by the market, maybe 1.5 times as likely to win, then you could bet those runners and know that you're in a profitable position. It requires you to know, of course, how much, or have a good feel for how much certain things are taken into the market. But by and large, you know, back then you could take something that had a large impact value or a very small impact value, and it would give you, you know, quite often those things were also underfactored or overfactored, providing it wasn't something too obvious, you know. I suppose things like beaten favourites last time out, that's something that's long been held to obviously influence the probability of, or runners who perform better on average if they were a beaten favourite last time out, something like that, maybe well factored into the market. But if you, the idea that if you picked a query that was a bit more obscure and it had a high impact value, chances are it wasn't that well incorporated into the market. One thing that I haven't seen, but again, I haven't looked particularly hard, was I was always interested in if you could use accumulated impact values to actually price up a tissue for a horse race. So less easy for non-handicap races, but where the horses are all going to be in all probability of quite different abilities. But when a handicap race, you know, presumably someone has helped you align the horse to obviously the, exactly the same chance of winning a race, Not very likely, but they've had a go at it. So if you had a 10-runner race and you thought to yourself, right, well, each horse has got a 10% chance of winning if the handicapper has, done a perfect job, then if you had impact value not settings, calculations for, let's say, 10 different key elements to that type of handicap race. You could then, so you found something that had an impact value of 2. So, and it applied to 5 horses out of 10. So those 5 horses would all become 20%. Now you've got 5 20% horses, 5 10% horses, so you're well over 100%. So the idea in my mind was that this could then be normalized back to 100%. And then you take another factor, this time it's 0.5, so a negative impact value. Half the runners are involved again. So you've got 5 horses that are 10%, 5 horses that are now 5%. Again, normalize it up to 100%. So you could do this again and again, combine all these factors together, and you'd get sort of percentages. Again, we'd have to probably convert it to 100%, and then you'd get a percentage chance for each horse to win based on a whole range of impact values. So this would be an absolutely primitive, not even that similar, but in terms of feeding attributes, not mostly we use machine learning to find out the impact of different attributes without sort of making any assumptions beforehand. We want to use a statistical technique that doesn't have any bias and is using a random selection of data points to then be tested on another set of data points that hasn't been used in the testing phase, all the rest of it. But this, the idea of feeding in several factors where you know the impact of them, and then assimilating them all together to create a sort of win prices, is actually a sort of very simplistic version of some of the more complex horse racing type models that are used nowadays. So yeah, I like the idea of that's something that obviously I could do as someone who's a complete mathematical novice, not a brilliant statistician by any stretch. If I had several impact values that I felt, my idea was 5 high-ranking impact values, 5 low-ranking negative impact values. I could run these over the horse race and get a sort of true price for all the horses doing that. I have not seen people necessarily do that. And I wonder if there is any merit in it whatsoever. Probably not. I tend to think that things that I can think of easily, as being unlikely to be a underbet in the market, but who knows? But then we get to A over E, so actual wins over expected wins, normally what it stands for. So we calculate expected wins for a group of horses, basis their odds. And then we compare that to the number of actual wins. And again, we can choose some attribute or query or theory to utilize this on to get an AE number. The idea being that if you're using 100% odds, your expected A over E would be about 1, basically, because the actual odds would be the same as, sorry, the actual wins would be the same as the expected wins, so like number divided by like number to get 1, and then it would go 105, 110 for things that where there were more wins than were expected, or 0.9, 0.8 for when there were less wins than were expected. And this has become the foundation of a lot of people's horse racing betting, and a way of often testing any theories they might have. And it's been particularly improved upon because we can get expected wins on historical data pretty decently from the Betfair SP. Although I haven't mentioned all the issues with the horse racing exchange liquidity earlier on in this podcast, I do wonder how long the Betfair SP will maintain its level of accuracy. That's possibly another podcast altogether. But yeah, so you can get a good idea of expected wins for all horses in their races, and then actual wins is no problem, obviously. So you can actually, and this contextualizes your query. So it actually says whether something is overbet or underbet. So you actually straight away know how much the market has incorporated this. Now, you may think at this point, well, that's just sort of completely null and void impact values, which do not take into account the odds of the runners. So, why would I ever use impact values when I can use A over E for my calculations or purposes? I quite like using, well, I say I used to quite like looking at both. So you could find something, you could query and find something that was underbet. And if you found something that was underbet, you'd then be able to look at the impact value and see whether it actually was, high impact but underbet. So something with underbet, you're going to get a positive actual over expected. So, if I get, say, 1.1 A of E value, is the impact value, have I found something that does genuinely improve the chances of a horse and is underbet, or have I found something that is genuinely overbet and, does not improve the chance of a horse? So, I don't know, let's say the great AP McCoy, on as your jockey, you might in that situation find out that he greatly improves the chances. Let's say impact may have a very high impact value, but you'd find out that his horses are massively overbet potentially overall. Who knows, there may be certain windows or segments where this is not the case, but overall, so that's somewhere where the impact value has put you away potentially. But if you are to find something where I like to be able to check whether the idea is that sort of there's a stronger feeling about something that has, if ever you find something which has a positive A over E but a negative impact value, it leaves you sort of scratching your head because you're thinking to yourself, right, so whatever this is under bet, but it doesn't make the chances of the horse any greater. So yeah, that can definitely be confusing, but I like to look at both. But again, impact value is normally something that I would look at just to confirm a theory, or I might come up with a theory, look at the impact value, and then after looking at the impact value, might try and look at the A over E to see whether it's actually worth betting it. But yeah, so I don't know, in terms of versus one versus the other, generally for quick betting, I will always want a positive A over E for any horse racing strategy. So I'd always be looking at one at A over E first. So in terms of versus, I guess A over E wins against impact value for me. But I do find the impact value is interesting. And I do wonder, particularly I suppose for handicaps, whether one could use lots of different impact values for creating of some sort of amalgamated true price. Yeah, so that's my, I'm afraid that's only my limited knowledge that I can pass on there, pulled up one. But I hope that has sparked some thoughts in yourself, maybe, or maybe you've got more questions that I can answer on Twitter if I can. So yeah, there you go. So that's it, a bit of a shorter one this time round. Still struggling with iTunes. Email contact with Anchor is regular to try and prompt them to pushing Apple for this, but hopefully SoundCloud and the Anchor app and the other sources is good enough for most people at the moment. And also do please give me any comments about recording equipment. I'm constantly trying slightly different positions of microphone and this kind of stuff. So if it comes across as too crackly or loud or anything like that, give me some input on that as well. And next, I will probably be looking at exchanges in general, I think, and particularly the competition in the market at the moment and how the exchange market will develop. And also, probably worth tackling the potential for exchanges within the US market as well. I tried to highlight a little bit of my thoughts on that. I recently was quoted in an article for ESPN, a very decent article about restrictions of punters in the US market and how the US market's going to deal with it or face it or what it thinks of it. Unfortunately, when I had about an hour long interview, and my comments obviously have to be condensed down, and but I have a lot of thoughts on that in general, in the US market in general, and also on the evolution of exchanges past and present. Okay, I hope you've enjoyed listening, and I hope to speak to you soon.